Please, sir, I want some more.
From Chicago, this is Film Spotting After Hours. I'm Adam Kempinar.
And I'm Matty Robinson. Welcome to another edition of the critically acclaimed Film Spotting After Hours, a little second show, the Rhoda, if you will, to the regular Film Spotting's Mary Tyler Moore. This week, we have a listener's choice review of Woody Allen's Scoop, chosen by listener Peter Durkee of Seattle, Washington. But before we get into that, Adam, I just wanted to address some listener feedback. We had a lot in the recent weeks, and we're not going to get into Batman on this show, but I wanted to read this one from Kathleen Blakely in Ottawa. Just thought I'd put my two cents in about the Joker's lip smacking. You and I had talked about that last week. Initially, it just creeped me out, but as the film went on, I realized that he was just touching his own scars, teasing his own pain to remind himself of who and what he was, to psych himself up. It's something he does mostly just before he pulls some great Joker-esque moment before the big reveal of the monologue. And I agree, and that's the reason I wanted to read this is because we didn't talk about the origin of the Joker and the way that the brothers Nolan handle that.
True.
And I just want to give them props for refreshing that was. He basically is making up stories throughout, and it's a lot of fun to go along with that.
Yeah, and do you buy Kathleen's assertion, though, that may be what he's doing? Do you think that is what Ledger was going for?
That's fine. You can read it any way you want. I think he stumbled upon kind of a physicalization.
Yeah.
You know, the hunched over and the lips were just a way of drawing out the Joker for him. So, I think psychologically, sure, if that works for you, go with it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do think that the Nolan brothers did a great job with that. I agree completely, and we didn't touch on that because it is another tie-in, in a way, to No Country for Old Men with Anton Chigurh. You don't know where he came from,
right,
who he is, what he is. He's this mythical figure. The Joker is a lot like that. We keep hearing these different stories about how he got his scars that he tells. You know, he has no fingerprints. There's no record of him anywhere. He is almost a Grim Reaper-like
character. He's kind of like Kevin Spacey in Seven in that way, John Doe. Again, no history, a man without a past. And,
right. You
know, we've been treated to countless origin stories this summer in every single superhero film. I just want to say, kudos for not having to drag me through that again.
I agree completely. Let's move on to this one from Neil Gillis in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island in Canada. And we're going to kind of spray to all fields here with listener feedback. This after-hour show is all about fitting in some of the things that have slipped through the cracks over the past few weeks and we wanted to touch on. And Neil writes, I was just going over the classic heist marathon list. This is back when we announced it, of course, and was heartbroken that my all-time favorite film didn't make the cut. Dog Day Afternoon. I'm sure that part of the marathon's intent is to inform listeners of great movies that they may not have seen, and perhaps you assume that most people were familiar with the brilliance that is Dog Day Afternoon. However, I must tell you that a lot of people in the younger generation have never witnessed Al Pacino's greatest performance or Sidney Lumet's masterwork. Just mention it, and I promise I'll never nag again.
Well, consider it done from beautiful Prince Edward Island. Yeah, I mean, it really isn't a classic heist film just because it doesn't fit into the 1950s, 60s sort of years that we were going for. We do get into the early 70s here.
Yeah.
But yeah, we both love Dog Day Afternoon. We've seen it countless times.
Yeah. So. And the marathons are about exposing listeners to movies that are obscure, maybe a little more obscure and that they haven't seen, but also for us. We do try to pick movies that have fallen through the cracks for us and that we need to check out. Dog Day Afternoon is a movie we both absolutely love.
I certainly don't mind singing its praises. Not only does it contain Al Pacino's greatest performance, John Cazale, Charles Durning, they're all terrific.
They're all
there.
Very good in it. And of course, our heist marathon will resume. It's been off for 2 weeks, but we'll have our review of the original Italian Job with Michael Caine.
And Charlize Theron in those small little cars?
No.
Oh.
Sorry.
All right.
That's the new one.
Let's move on to Peter Labuza writing in from St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, guys. I was reading my daily movie news on joblow.com when I saw that Tim Burton was officially moving forward on his Alice in Wonderland project. Not being a huge Burton fan but always interested in his work, I read the article and found he had cast his lead actress, an unknown name, Mia, Adam, what's the last name?
Wasikowska.
I didn't exactly remember the name at the time. I still haven't seen In Treatment on HBO, as the article told me. But then I remembered Mia was a very crucial honorable mention on Adam's list for up-and-coming actors. I have to ask, did Adam help Mr. Burton land her lead role?
Actually, Mia does owe me a cut for being her agent. You know, Kempinar Studios here obviously came through with this one. That was really exciting to see. Peter sent that in. A couple other listeners made that note as well, that Alice in Wonderland is happening, and he couldn't have done a better job, Tim Burton, in terms of casting that. I can absolutely see her in that role. She is a brilliant actress, and Peter reminded me that she was an honorable mention, that made me feel bad because she should have been in the top five, especially when I look at some of the other names I had in the top five. But she really is an amazing young talent, and I think she's going to be great in this role because there's this gamine, if that's the right word, or if I'm saying it right, like quality to her, a lot like Giulietta Messina, Fellini's wife, and she really just has this innocence about her that I think is going to be perfect in that role. So that really is exciting to see.
Hey, I'm just psyched. Alice in Wonderland by Tim Burton. That's going to be a lot of fun. I hope he gets back to sort of that, you know, Beetlejuice and Edward Scissorhands. Mm-hmm. Get back to that dark fun.
Yeah, it could be good. I look forward to it as well. This one from Chris Tansky in Rochester, New York. Love the show. I just wanted to comment about your movies to teach an alien about Earth. I had the unfortunate task of taking my 7-year-old son to Meet Dave. Easily one of the worst films of the year,
but
not the worst, thanks to Happening. We agree with that. The only thing positive of note I took from this film is when Eddie Murphy and Gabrielle Union's characters watch a movie to better understand Earth, the movie was none other than It's a Wonderful Life, reaffirming your guys' list. I'm not sure if Meet Dave was the reassurance you were looking for, but it's good to know you were on the right track. It's a Wonderful Life, actually, I think my number three choice, right, or maybe four, and I explained because, yeah, you just want to show them about how we can all back each other in the small community and looking for those deep answers about why am I here and what's my purpose in life. So there you go. Meet Dave obviously thought that It's a Wonderful Life was a good choice as well. I'll take it, even if it's from that terrible movie.
All right, now for something completely different. Hey guys, this is Jamie writing in from Seoul, Korea. I've been listening to your podcast for some time now, okay, I admit a couple of months, and I have come to anticipate every new episode. Keep up the good work. However, there is one tiny glitch. Even though I love listening to the podcast, I can't help but think at times, gee, can I watch that? I'm sure that you're playing to a fairly wide demographic of people who are capable of watching movies of any rating. Yet keep in mind, there is a small percentage of us who are probably teens. And even if it is absolutely titillating to think of watching a recommended R-rated film for sexual content and violence, it is still painfully obvious that we teens are not old enough and we might not appreciate the film as much as men, as men of your caliber. I am not saying that you review movies that are only for adults after you recently reviewed WALL-E, The Incredible Hulk, and more. But sometimes during your top fives and your movie marathons, it is hard to find one movie that it has a proper rating or of a level of intelligence that it can be appreciated by a teenager. Even though I could see Gus Van Sant's idea in Paranoid Park, don't worry, I watched it with an adult person.
We don't worry.
I still couldn't understand the majestic qualities that you guys were praising it for. It could be that I just don't get Gus Van Sant, which is true. I don't get Gus Van Sant sometimes, but I personally feel that it is, again, age and appreciation.
Jamie goes on to say, I have a request from listener to presenter. Could you please suggest a couple of good movies that can be appreciated and watched by teens? Now, I don't mean one of those 90-minute suckers filled with bad dialogue and horrible punchlines. I mean a film with slightly mature themes and that can be enjoyable and appreciated by a teen, preferably 14 years and up, and an adult audience. If possible, could you make it a top five? But if you find the idea unacceptable, just suggest a couple, please. My friends and I are dying over here. We are in no mood to dish out money for some summer blockbuster when we can watch the good stuff again. Jamie from Seoul in South Korea. And it's really interesting because that's something we don't think about. We do have a lot of younger listeners,
right,
and we don't think about that and necessarily gear the show around the age of people that might be listening. And I think about the fact that a little bit differently than you, Maddie, of course, growing up for me, I had HBO and Cinemax and things like that in my house at a very early age. I also had a television in my room with cable at a very early age. And my parents, God bless them, didn't put many restrictions on me when it came to watching movies. So this whole email actually is kind of foreign to me in a way, trying to think about it through Jamie's eyes, because I didn't have any of those restrictions on, oh, I can't watch that movie because I'm underage. That just never happened for me.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, you and I must have grown up on the same hippie commune, because my parents never, ever restricted any of that stuff. They took me to Amadeus, I remember, when it first came out in the theater. I thought, oh, wow, this is a very adult movie. And, of course, we had The Godfather Part II. I remember the nude scene, one of the pivotal moments of my childhood in Godfather Part II. And I remember we had a friend over, one of my sister's friends, who must have been 12. We watched Monty Python, The Meaning of Life. And if you've ever seen that film, here we are all gathered. I think they felt a little sheepish about that.
Probably.
One, exposing someone else's kids. But yeah, you're right. We do get tunnel vision here on this show. And so I'm sort of at a loss. I really don't know what to suggest.
Either.
So we need to reach out to our film spotting listeners across the world and say, we need some help in recommending some movies for Jamie here.
I don't know if it'll be a top five or not, but we would love to help Jamie out. So you help us out. Give us some titles of movies that can be appreciated by adults and by teens. Obviously, there are a ton of them, but basically they have to be PG or PG-13.
I'm guessing, yeah.
Yeah, so in order for it to work for Jamie, that is what we're looking for. Send us your thoughts, feedback at filmspotting.net, and hopefully we can help Jamie out.
All right. Well, Annie from Long Island, Queens, New York. I'm finally catching up on the latest Film Spotting After Hours, which I've been looking forward to because The Haunting is a favorite movie of mine. Your conversation entertained and enlightened, though I have to say the highlight was listening to Karen from Ohio give her reasons for choosing this film.
It was our highlight as well. Trust us.
Yeah. The low light was your repeated assertion that The Haunting was based on a short story by Shirley Jackson. The Haunting of Hill House is, in fact, a full-length novel that stands as Jackson's most familiar work next to her classic short story, The Lottery. I expect more from my two favorite film nerds, but I love you anyway.
Well, we appreciate that, Annie, and I think I was the one who repeatedly asserted that during our last After Hours, where we did review The Haunting for Karen from Ohio. She was our Listener's Choice winner, and we did want to make this correction because The Lottery is one of my all-time favorite short stories. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely brilliant, and I think it's required reading in pretty much every intro to literary analysis class in college. And if you haven't read it yet, whether you're in high school or college or after, whatever, you need to check it out. I really just assume that Shirley Jackson wrote only short stories. Maybe I'm a bad English major, or I am definitely a bad English major, but I didn't realize that she wrote novellas or that she wrote novels. I thought that she wrote short stories like The Lottery, and I assume that The Haunting of Hill House was one of those. So my bad, Annie. We apologize. Thank you very much for the correction. And we have another correction from Jay in L.A. To be a nerd, he writes, your awards, and he's talking about our awards for our 70 sci-fi marathon, the Damn Dirty Apes, mm-hmm. right, is what we call them. He says, special effects are events that happen on set, i.e. explosions, etc. Visual effects are what is added after the fact. So your awards were for visual effects, not special effects. Your visual effects geek, Jay in L.A.
All right, thank you very much.
Yes, duly noted.
Jason Davies from Darwin, Australia writes in, Mr. Ballgame, I have a complaint I wish to make against you. Tonight, I watched Cabaret for the first time. Great film, right, Adam?
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could tell you it was a good movie or not, but I'm afraid I can't. The reason for this is every time I saw Michael York on screen, all I could hear in my head is your rendition of, have you ever seen anyone renewed? Granted, I preferred your version of that line to the entire movie of Logan's Run, with the exception of Ustinov, but please refrain from distracting me from other movies in the future. Kind regards from a loyal Film Spotting fan.
Yeah, I can see how that could ruin it for you. We actually had one listener, and it's a longtime listener, now I'm forgetting the name, I didn't write it down, who actually suggested that you should just do entire shows in your Michael York voice.
Well, you know, you can apply it to almost anything. You had me at hello, or I'm trying to think of another famous line, the whore.
Nice. That is pretty horrific.
All right. Well, let's move on now to our Listener's Choice review now. And instead of hearing us blathering about this film, Woody Allen's 2006 film Scoop, let's hear from the man who actually chose this film for us, Peter Durkee of Seattle, Washington. And he can explain why he wanted us to talk about this film and also hear a clip.
Hi, Adam. Hi, Maddie. This is Peter in Seattle, and I'm going to attempt to explain why I like Scoop. The bottom line is it's an enjoyable film. It works in ways that it really doesn't have any right to work, because it is kind of slapdash and thrown together. But the characters are charming and likable, and even the villain is likable. And it just works in a way that Woody films in recent years often haven't. It's funny and not too overwrought, if you get my drift.
For my next trick, I'm going to need a volunteer.
This is your first time on stage?
Yes.
You're an incredible human being and a credit to your race.
Last night, when you put me inside that Chinese box.
Yeah, the dematerializer.
A spirit materialized.
I'm a reporter, and I have the scoop of the decade. It's got everything. Big names, murder.
Write this down. Peter Lyman, son of Lord Lyman, is the tarot card serial killer.
This will be the biggest story to hit London since Jack the Ripper.
Jack the Ripper. Is that capitalized?
You're in over your head.
I'm a journalist sitting on top of one of the biggest stories of all time.
Yeah, for a college paper.
That's him. Let's follow him.
You know, I think you could probably get this guy to get interested in you. Particularly if he's got a twisted mind.
All right, Maddie, we heard from Peter, and we heard from Woody and Scarlett Johansson there in the clip as well. Peter said the characters are charming and likable, even the villain, Hugh Jackman. He thinks it works in a way recent Woody films haven't. It's funny and not too overwrought. And we should note that actually, even though he made other suggestions, including The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai, and I believe The Counterfeiters was another movie he suggested, he gave us those three choices. The two movies he really wanted to hear us talk about were Love Actually, which we discussed on a previous After Hours, another listener's choice, and also Lars and the Real Girl, which we got to over the course of a show a few weeks back. So it came down to Scoop for him. You heard his reasons for liking the film. Is Peter right?
Well, it's fun. It's fun to watch people having fun, sort of like watching the Elks Club put on their, you know, holiday show. Obviously, everybody seems to be having a good time. And I will grant Peter that Hugh Jackman is a delight. I mean, he brings it every single role. He takes this very, very seriously. But in the end, wow, I think the dialogue basically is what really lost it for me. It's just not funny.
No.
It's just not that funny. It's delightful. It's pretty unoffensive. But on the whole, I can't say I had a lot of fun.
No, and of course, just briefly, the plot of it is
pretty simple.
Oh, yeah,
let's get into the plot. Joe Strumbull, played by Ian McShane,
right.
He's a reporter.
Right.
He dies. And so then he gets sent on the River Styx on a boat piloted by Death. All of which looks like it's filmed on a high school play set.
You're right.
Which actually is fun. I really, really buy into that.
Yeah.
He gets a scoop from a secretary who had also recently died on the boat. And so he jumps off the boat to come back and reappear to a fledgling journalist played by Scarlett Johansson.
An American in London.
American in London to give her the scoop that Hugh Jackman's character, this sort of ruling class, aristocratic...
Socialite,
could have been...
A serial killer.
Could be the serial killer.
Tarot card killer.
Yes.
And so then she goes on investigating that, and she gets spoken to. She gets the vision of Ian McShane during a performance of a magician or an illusionist played by Woody Allen. He's Splendini. So then they end up teaming up, and they actually kind of play this father-daughter team, of course, where she has to pass him off as her dad as they go into these parties and stuff
and do
their
investigating. I think that's where the comedy's supposed to ensue.
It's supposed to happen there. I will give Peter this. It does work better than most recent Woody Allen films. It certainly is more charming and likable than Small Time Crooks or Curse of the Jade Scorpion or The Deplorable Hollywood Ending, and I probably would put it above or at least on an equal field with Cassandra's Dream, which
I like Cassandra's Dream better. I think it was a step up.
A little bit better, but not much more. And of course, that film is more serious. That's a drama, not a comedy like the others. I will say to Peter, I'm with you, Maddie, but I am genuinely grateful to Peter that he forced me to finally see it because, as I mentioned, I skipped this movie despite the fact that I'm a huge Woody Allen fan, and I have not even been curious to check this out on video just because of the fact that I'm not a huge Scarlett Johansson fan. I thought it looked stupid, and his recent comedies just have not been good. I mean, since Sweet and Lowdown, the only Woody Allen film I've really, really liked is Match Point, so there was nothing really drawing me to see this film. I'm glad I finally did see it, but you're right. The jokes in this movie are stale. It's the same old references Woody Allen's making that he made 10, 20, 30 years ago.
I was watching it, and we actually provided our own commentary track with a wah-wah every single time one of those landed with a thud.
Yeah, they're there. You're absolutely right. And watching Woody stumble through his lines, especially that refrain he uses of, you know, you're a wonderful crowd, you're a credit to your race, really, you're brilliant, you're wonderful, whatever. Watching him stumble through that, he's always been that kind of an actor. My question for you, Maddie, as an actor, is it the lines that make it so painful to watch now? They're just bad and before they were good? Or has he just become more annoying? Is he stumbling even more? And does he seem more out of place and it's not working?
He's not committing. The problem is he's not committing. He can give the line readings that he's always done and they'll work fine. We'll get what we get here. But the fact of the matter is you need to sell them. You need to really invest.
And he's not.
And no one really invests here except for, I'll give her credit for this, Scarlett Johansson tries her darndest.
She tries.
And she's so bad.
She's so bad.
She's so bad. And, you know, she's trying to play this, you know, earnest Midwesterner. And I get it. We are earnest out here. But you don't need to shake your head so much just to get the thoughts out of your mouth.
Right. Because she's trying to be an earnest Midwesterner crossed with a neurotic, nebbish, Jewish Woody Allen.
Yeah.
Is what she's doing.
And I actually had a whole monologue I was going to go off and read her the riot act, but she was saved. She was saved.
How?
Because this weekend, I caught up with My Blueberry Nights.
Yeah, starring, and you saw someone worse?
Starring a Nora Jones, who Ravi Shankar's kid. I didn't know anything about her, but apparently she's not an actor. I can tell you that much. She's awful.
Right.
She is terrible. So I take back. Scarlett Johansson is saved here. But getting back to the commitment thing, Ian McShane also, he's having a lot of fun, but there's an early scene where he tries to bribe Death to get off the boat. Okay, look, that's been done. It's from the 1960s Mel Brooks School of Comedy. That's fine. But you got to really try and do it. If you're going to do it, really try and sell it. And he doesn't. He just pulls out like a $5 bill and just kind of lamely waves it at him.
Right.
Like, you need to bring it.
Yeah.
You need to say, okay, I'm trying to get off this boat. You need to sell comedy as earnestly as you do drama, more so.
Yeah, and actually that is another point. You talk about not committing. It's the lines, and it's also the direction, and it's the whole concept of the movie. I'm not saying I was looking for deep explorations of anything here in Scoop, but all these things don't make sense. I mean, you start asking yourself, why does Joe Strombl appear to them in that box? Like, how does he appear to them in that box? It just doesn't make any sense to me. And again, I'm not looking for an actual supernatural explanation, but just it seems as though Woody just said, you just have to buy this, and I'm going to be kind of lazy and not really explain anything at all, and you're just going to go with it. Just like you're going to go with the fact that we assume he can jump off the boat whenever he wants and apparently come down and appear to people. It just really doesn't make any sense. And again, my point is not that I needed a whole lot more there, but it was just lazy to me. Just like I thought Cassandra's Dream was lazy, Woody just sort of expects the audience to fill in a lot of blanks that actually we need some information there and we never got. So that was something I definitely noticed. And back to Scarlett Johansson. She can act, unfortunately, and we had her. I know I had her in my top five of off-putting actors, or however we put that list. And watching her play a character here, and this came up during our recent discussion of The Dark Knight and Heath Ledger, how I didn't think he could play the Joker originally because I couldn't see him trying to be a big character. She's playing a character here this whole time. She's playing this neurotic Woody-type character. And so every single gesture and line reading is a put-on. There's nothing genuine about it.
No, it's so false.
She could almost be in a silent movie. She's gesticulating and overstating everything so much. And a perfect counterpoint to her in this movie, Maddie, Romola Garai as Vivian, who plays her best friend.
Yes.
The woman she's...
Very nice
she's
turn.
Spending
yes.
She's staying in her room or whatever. They're friends. That's why she's over here in London. She actually plays... I didn't know this until I looked it up on IMDb this morning. She plays the 18-year-old Bryony from Atonement. She's the older Bryony, the nurse in Atonement. But she acts Scarlett Johansson under the table. She's truly funny and charming and sexy. And if you put her in the role that Scarlett Johansson is playing and have her play it as she plays Vivian, not a Woody Allen clone... then you've actually got the potential for a kind of Nick and Nora Charles detective mystery fun thing.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, we have to watch Scarlett Johansson doing all of these gestures and being over the top and just trying to play a character so badly. It just doesn't work. I wish Romola Garai had gotten the part.
Oh, it's a great point. And makes the scenes between her and Hugh Jackman fall even more flat, because we're supposed to believe that a love interest develops between the two of them. And the fact of the matter is, Jackman brings it. He brings his charm. He brings that gravitas to every single scene. And she doesn't. She's playing a cartoon character.
Right.
And it just falls flat. I do want to say there is one good line. There's always a couple good lines in Woody Allen. I do have to say this one, delivered by the great Splendini. I was born into the Hebrew persuasion, but when I got older, I converted to narcissism.
Right.
He still got it. He still got it.
That, for me, rang like one of those like leftover lines from Annie Hall,
though. Probably that's what he's going through at this point.
He does like to recycle them. But I would also say the cinematographer, and I may just botch his name here, Remy Adafarison. He shot Match Point 2, and this movie looks really good. It's very slick looking, I think, but there's nothing distinctly Woody Allen about it. None of the long takes are interesting to watch. I really just think visually there's not a lot going on here, just like there isn't in Cassandra's Dream.
And there's a lot of possibility there, especially in those garden parties, these beautiful English estates. Again, they're nice. They're kind of nice to look at, but there's nothing signature about them.
No, there isn't, unfortunately. So, Peter, we do appreciate the suggestion. I, as I said, did actually enjoy it more than I thought I would. And
yes.
I'm really glad I saw it, because it's one of those Woody Allen movies that slipped through the cracks for me. But I can't say I had a ton of fun watching it, or that it's one of his better efforts. Maybe just one of his better ones over the last 10 years. So thank you again, Peter, for that one. And we actually do want to announce our Listener's Choice winner this week, our current winner, who's going to get to pick the next film we review on Film Spotting. And what we did here, Maddie, is we took all the donations, everyone who donated between the shows 214 and our most recent show 220, so actually seven shows worth, and picked randomly a winner out of a hat. And since it was seven shows, and we really envision doing this more like every four or five shows, we actually have four prizes that we're going to give out here. this week on After Hours. So our grand prize winner, though, our listener's choice winner, Maddie, you want to go ahead and announce, it is
Neil from Oxford, Oxfordshire.
Congratulations, Neil. You get to pick the next movie we're going to review here on Film Spotting After Hours. What you have to do is send us an email, feedback@filmspotting.net, with three movies you'd like to hear us discuss and maybe a brief explanation why for each one. We're going to pick one of those and discuss them on our next After Hours show about a month from now. We also have a few other winners. We want to give out two Film Spotting t-shirts to some of our donors. We got some swag we want to give out. Maddie, go ahead and announce the t-shirt winners.
All right. Lawrence from Highgate, London, and Robert from Dalgety Bay, Dunfermline, Fife, Scotland.
Very well done, Maddie. I think you mostly got that one. Yeah. There's a UK bent this week to this show. Actually, it ties right in with Scoop, too. And these were totally random. I'm serious. They were totally random, but a perfect connection with Scoop with Woody shooting in London there. We want to thank everyone. We have one more winner we want to announce this week. They're going to get a copy of M, the Fritz Lang adaptation, the graphic novel that is out now by John J. Muth, which I did write the foreword to inexplicably. They asked me to write the foreword. Very proud of that edition of the book. And we're going to give that out to
Eric Martin, and he is from the colonies, Orlando, Florida.
Again, congratulations to Eric, to Robert, to Lawrence, and Neil, our listener's choice winner. Send us an email at feedback@filmspotting.net, and we will tell you how to claim your prize.
And we should remind everyone a little bit of the process here. The reason that these guys win this Film Spotting t-shirt to choose the listener's choice review is that they did donate over those last five shows. And of course, for every $10 that you donate, your name gets entered into the Film Spotting hat, and we promise to be a little bit more diligent. We're going to pick a winner every four or five shows.
Yes, we will. And of course, this has been over the last seven. That's why we want to give out some extra prizes there. So we really do appreciate it. And Maddie, you say every week that, you know, we're truly humbled. Yeah. It keeps us doing what we're doing. Well, it really
does. It really
does. You guys are the lifeblood of this show. We would be lost without you, obviously, just in terms of your feedback, but also your support. And the generosity that you guys show to us has really been amazing. So we really do appreciate all of that. And we actually wanted to give a little shout out to one of our listeners right now, Sean in Seattle. He runs the Landmark Theater there, the Metro Classics in Seattle, and they are putting on a marathon. And we like to highlight these marathons every once in a while because sometimes they tie in directly with Film Spotting. Mm-hmm. And we know we have a ton of Film Spotting listeners in the Seattle area, including, obviously, Peter, our winner this week, our listener's choice winner. And they've got a great thing going here. What they're going to do is they're going to play some foreign language films. They wanted to fit in some of those. So they've got a World War II theme. And the first 3 weeks are films from the Axis powers. They've got a double feature of German Expressionism, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, and Murnau's The Last Laugh. Then they go to La Strada from Fellini and Ikaru from Kurosawa. Then they go to The Allies, Maddie.
Yeah, Black Narcissus, a Paul and Pressburger film, of course, from the UK. And from France, Pickpocket.
Yeah, the Bresson film.
And from the Soviet Union, I Am Cuba.
And for the final 3 weeks, they get to the American side. They've got some movies starring the great Lee Marvin.
Oh, the good old Lee Marvin. You can't get more American than Lee Marvin.
No, Aldrich's The Dirty Dozen, Borman's Hell in the Pacific, and then Fuller's The Big Red One, The Reconstruction. So all good stuff. If you're in the Seattle area, we do recommend that you go down to the Metro Classics, to the Landmark Theater there in Seattle, and check out those movies. I would be there if we were in Seattle. Looks like a lot of fun. And there will be trivia questions before each show. There's going to be prizes, so check that out.
Hey, I do want to mention, I want to give a shout out to Rory Jobst. His play, Daniel Day-Lewis and the Big Patatas, opened recently in Chicago, and it's running at the Prop Theater until August 8th, I believe, Thursdays and Fridays at 8 p.m. And it, of course, has a big tie-in with Film Spotting. It is about this character, Daniel Day-Lewis. We think it's Daniel Day-Lewis, who is so in character for his role as Dash, who I believe is some sort of taxidermist. Anyway, another woman stumbles across him, and the hilarity ensues. It's a lot of fun. Rory did a really nice job with it. It's sort of Ionesco meets Quentin Tarantino. And I want to give a major shout-out to Kate Teichman, who plays Daniel Day-Lewis, or Dash, or, you know, is it really, you know, in my mind, I'm still wrapping my head around it. Is it really Daniel Day-Lewis? But anyway, she's ferociously great.
Wow.
She is phenomenal, and you just have to attack that role like Daniel Day-Lewis would, and so it was a lot of fun to be able to get out there and check that out.
And Ionesco meets Quentin Tarantino. Rory, you have Maddie's permission. Put it on the quotes.
Right.
Maddie will see it up there in lights. Maddie Robinson Film Spotting. Go ahead and use it. And it's interesting that you went and checked that out. That's absolutely great, and congratulations to Rory for putting that on. It obviously sounds like it was a good show. I know you did obviously have a lot of fun there. And some of these Chicago area listeners, and we have listeners, you know, in Seattle who may be congregating, of course, at the Landmark there to see some of these films coming up. Well, we also had something recently posted in our boards that I noticed, our message boards at filmspotting.net, where someone wrote in and said, I keep hearing that there are Film Spotting contributors from Ealing, London. We do. We've been getting a lot of donations lately. I just moved to Ealing and was wondering just how big the Ealing Film Spotting community is. Anyone up for a pint? We're certainly up for a pint if we were there. But I just wanted to note that because I want people to know that they can come over to filmspotting.net, check out the message boards, go to the local events and meetups portion of that board. There are Film Spotting listeners all over that are looking to get together, maybe talk about movies, just have a drink or whatever. So if you're in the Ealing area or wherever you may be, check out that local events and meetups.
I know you hang out on the message board sometimes.
I do.
I try and get there. It's all still a little bit scary
for
me.
You were in the lounge the other night. There's like a chat room, and you were in it the other night, and then I got in it for the first time the other night, and they were telling me all the things that you were telling them in the lounge of the night, and of course, 99% of it was all lies.
You can be anybody you want on the radio and the internet.
Apparently you can. You can just make up whatever you want. So check out our message boards there and maybe meet some really interesting people. We love meeting Film Spotting listeners. They're the best.
Also, we should mention that we are going to have a meetup coming up at the end of Chicago.
Thank you for noting that. It's actually going to be August 23rd. We're going to have way more details on this later, official details, but we're basically going to be getting together, maybe try to see a movie at the Landmark here in Chicago, either that or the Music Box, probably the Landmark, and then we're just going to go and we're going to get a private area in a bar for about 3 hours. We'll all pay, you know, maybe 20 or 25 bucks and have unlimited drinks for that 3 or 4 hour period, and we're just going to kick back and get to know each other and have a good time. I think M. Robert Turnage from Dallas, the Elegant Nemesis, is coming in for this event.
We have people flying in for this?
That's right.
Oh, man.
Candace, the invaluable Candace, who we couldn't do the show without, she may be coming in from Texas for this meetup. And, of course, we hope to see many of the people out in the Chicago area come out to this thing. So, again, we'll have a lot more details about this later on the show and on filmspotting.net.
What Lebowski character are you going to come dressed as?
The Jesus.
Are you? I will come as Liam then, his partner.
And speaking of the Jesus, I've actually been waiting to work in a line here ever since I finally saw Step Brothers last night, which I probably liked a little bit less than you, but we're kind of in the same boat.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. It's not
funny
much of a
stuff
movie.
There. Yeah, it loses momentum. Let's put it that way. But the best line in that is when Will Ferrell sings and John C. Reilly says, "Your voice is like a mixture of Fergie and Jesus."
That's a good line.
So that's what I hear from you every week through these headphones, Maddie, on Film Spotting.
All right. We also want to mention real quickly Recast Reservoir Dogs, that contest going on over at filmgaming.spout.com.
Yeah. And actually, if you're listening to this show on Tuesday when this show comes out, you'll have one more day to get in your entries. And really, that's another way you can support the show.
Yeah.
Go to filmgaming.spout.com. Share your picks for who you'd like to see in the roles of Reservoir Dogs. We really do look forward to sharing those entries on the air. And Maddie, I think we just have one more email we want to fit in here.
All right. Finally, some final thoughts on our top five creatures list. Actually, a really popular top five list that we did a couple months or a couple weeks ago, I guess. Just want to start out by saying I love the show. I find myself listening and driving around the streets of Chicago with headphones in my ears, worried that it is only a matter of time before I'm reprimanded by the Chicago PD. But until that day comes, I will continue to be an avid listener / fugitive. I listened to your top five creatures list, and although I'm not a huge sci-fi guy, I wanted to suggest a quick pick. As a child of the 80s, my journey with Bastion, Atreyu, and Falcor would occur pretty much on a daily basis. I am talking, of course, about the never-ending story. What kid didn't want to jump on Falcor's back and travel to the magical land of Fantastica? Adam raising his hand. Yes, Falcor made my short list.
Really?
Made my short list. Yeah, yeah. And also, there's like some talking rocks in there that I thought were pretty cool.
I never watched the never-ending story.
Are you serious?
Never saw it as a kid.
Are you
and
serious?
I haven't seen it since.
Oh, dude.
No.
Sophie and Holden need to see that film.
Maybe so. I got the references. I know Bastion and I know those names, but I never have seen the whole film from start to finish.
All right. You got to check it out. Well, he does continue. Also, a random honorable mention, although not a very high-profile character, the lady with three bosoms from the Total Recall bar scene. As a kid on the cusp of puberty, it will forever be burned in my memory. Thanks, guys. Love the show. Go Cubs. These are our listeners.
Yes, Dan Delaney. We appreciate it. I mean, how do you forget the first time you see three boobs? I don't know.
I will always remember where I was.
Yeah. Well, in closing here, we also want to pay a few more bills and just mention that if you haven't received yet, if you haven't purchased your Film Spotting t-shirt for summer, All the cool kids are wearing them.
Right. And
you
us.
You can get it. And us. That's right. The cool kids and us. We finally have our own t-shirts now. You can check them out in an assortment of colors. You can also get the baby onesie if you want. We're sending one to Sam and Carrie. We saw Sam and Carrie, by the way. Of course,
yes.
Sam Van Halgren. A few weeks ago, we drove up to Milwaukee, saw the handsome David.
Very handsome. Can say not the mailman's kid.
No.
Got a little Sam in him.
Yeah, he's going to have the fluffy hair. And I think he's even wearing the glasses right now. May have come out that way. So, but it was great to see them. And we're going to send them the Film Spotting onesie. I look forward to seeing David decked out in it. You can check out all our swag at filmspottingswag.com. We hope you enjoyed this edition, this longish edition of Film Spotting After Hours. For Film Spotting, I'm Adam Kempinar.
And I'm Matty Robinson. Thanks for listening.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.